Hello, everyone. I'm Jim Paymar, and you are listening to The Big Shift, the podcast that looks at the tectonic changes our world, our country, our politics, our media, and our institutions are going through. Today, we're talking about the media with a longtime expert in that field, Judith Bishop, the author of a book called Changing Channels, From Just the Facts to Outrageous Opinions. Judy, welcome to the show. So glad you're taking time to discuss the changing media landscape with me.
Thanks, Jim, for the invitation. And it sure is changing, isn't it?
I mean, you can't keep up with it. You know, just for a bit of background on Judy, she's produced documentaries for CNBC, Court TV, PBS, as well as producing for NBC's Tim Russert and Chris Matthews, as well as Dick Cavett, one of America's premier talk show hosts. Full disclosure, Judy and I have worked together at WABC-TV, Eyewitness News in New York, as well as CNBC, and at the Fox Broadcasting Company, not the Fox News Channel. I wanted to make that clear distinction, Judy.
That's an important distinction, Jim. Absolutely.
That was when Rupert Murdoch came over here and bought five television stations and formed a television network. And everyone thought he was a fool for trying to go up against ABC, NBC, and ABC.
Well, you got to give him kudos for that. He did succeed.
He did succeed in a big way. So, you know, I'd like to start off by, you know, talking about the changes in the media landscape. You know, we're old enough to remember, unfortunately, that, you know, TVs started back in the 1940s. We weren't around then, but there were over-the-air signals from big antennas. We used rabbit ear antennas to receive them. The broadcasts were in black and white. You remember your first TV?
Oh, I remember the delivery men carrying it up the walk, up the steps into the living room. My brother and I were perched at the window looking out and absolutely in awe. And again, this dates us, but I remember well Howdy Doody and Captain Video.
Gunsmoke and Desi and Lucy and all of those shows, Jack Benny, Jackie Gleason. Unfortunately, we go back to that era, or fortunately, it was a simpler time. And, you know, then color TV came along in the 1960s, and that was a really big deal.
Oh, it absolutely was. Definitely. You know, you mentioned the title of your podcast, The Big Shift. I think television was one of the biggest shifts in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It changed everything. And then it was suddenly in living color in your living room. And I remember as a child, not only did I like the entertainment portion of it, but I was a news junkie at a very young age. I can remember staying up with my mother till 1 or 2 in the morning watching political conventions back in the days where the voting public had no idea who the candidate was going to be.
I was a news junkie too. My dad worked in television, and we were forced at 6:30 every night to watch Walter Cronkite. We could not watch Huntley Brinkley on the NBC network. We could only watch Walter Cronkite, Uncle Walter. you know, so much has changed. I mean, we had three networks at one time, NBC, CBS, and ABC. I guess it was another network called Dumont that didn't last very long. And that was about it. And everyone watched the same small group of programs. And that kind of pulled our country together with kind of a collective experience. Don't you agree?
I do. It was very, very simple. It was one man, middle-aged, white, definitely seasoned in the field as a correspondent. And as I jokingly like to say, he had an adequate amount of hair. And he was God. Yeah. It was the gospel according to one of the big three networks.
Yeah, yep. But you know, that collective experience that we had watching Walter Cronkite, or, you know, Ed Sullivan at 7 o'clock on Sunday nights, that, you know, everyone sat around the TV and watched together as a family. We don't have that anymore. That's totally changed. I mean, my daughter watches TV on her computer. My son doesn't watch TV at all. My wife watches her programs on the Hallmark Channel, and I'm still a news junkie. But we don't have that collective experience anymore of watching together. I think something's missing.
I think you're right. I used to be a network person. And mm-hmm. I would say once CNN got its sea legs, I watch cable news. I don't want to watch a 6:30 newscast. By then, I've seen it and heard it all on CNN.
I know. And it changes so fast that at 6:30, when, you know, the news is prepared in the afternoon and the anchor, Lester Holt or David Muir or Nora O'Donnell come on at 6:30, that news is already is dated by 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I was going to use the word breaking news, but we all know that that's been done to death and something is not breaking when they've covered it for the 14th time. But
yeah, breaking news. Well, they're trying some of the networks, the cable channels are getting away from that. But and you know, now it seems like we're going through another amazing transformation. I mean, we went from TV to a few cable channels back in, you know, the 80s, to hundreds of them. And now we're going through this kind of streaming revolution, you know, where there's Netflix and Amazon Prime and HBO and Hulu, just to name a few. I mean, it's mind-boggling. I don't even know how to watch television anymore.
No, it's a whole new world. I have grandchildren in their early 20s, and they're very politically savvy. They're very astute, but they don't turn the TV on. They're watching it on their watches, on their mobile phones, on their computers. They're doing it whenever they want, wherever they want. I don't really think any of them have ever sat down at 6:30 and watched a network news show, yet they're very cognizant of what's happening in the world.
I just don't know how you cut through all the clutter. I don't know how to even figure out how to watch half of these channels. You know, you go on to a Netflix or you go on to an Amazon Prime, and they all have a different platform for how you search things out, and it takes forever, and you have to have logins and credit cards and pay subscription fees and
a dreaded password, Jim.
And the dreaded password that you have to change all the time. It's so confusing and perplexing. And going back to what we were talking about earlier, this collective experience, we don't have that anymore at all.
No, we don't. And to go back to the Amazon and the Netflix thing, Bruce Springsteen had a song, 57 channels and nothing on. Often the case. You'll go through it and you'll think, well, that's dumb. I don't want to watch it, or I've already seen it twice. And it's really hard. Yes, we have quantity, but I'm not so sure we have quality.
No, the quality seems to suffer. Occasionally a great series will come out, or I don't remember the last time I watched network TV. It might have been during the Super Bowl. I mean, why watch network TV anymore? Although millions of people still do. I mean, they do get together and they watch their favorite program. So I guess I'm not one of those people. And now we're seeing the advent of like broadband channels that are watched on cable and the internet. And then there's something called Fast TV. I don't know if you've heard of this one.
I never heard of that. No.
It stands for free ad-supported streaming TV, and it's where you watch programs without paying for anything. There's no subscription, like Pluto and Crackle, and I don't know if you've heard of any of these names. I've just been looking into it. That's how I know about it. It's kind of an extended version of traditional TV, and you got to have a Roku device or a Fire Stick or a Chromecast stick that you put into your smart TV. Of course, if you don't have a smart TV, you can't watch any of this stuff.
And if you're not smart enough to use it.
Right. And I bought a Sony 4K TV. I thought I was buying the latest and greatest model, but it doesn't update the software. So when these changes occur in the media landscape, I can't even advance my TV to watch these shows, and there's nothing wrong with my TV, so why should I junk it?
It's so complicated. When it comes to entertainment programming, I'm all for diversity and lots of options. But when it comes to news, especially in these troubled political times, I say, consider the source. I really want a real news organization. I don't want some bozo in his basement telling me what really happened. And I think that, that's a real, you need people with credentials. You need people who are journalists, not people who are, I don't know, part-time truth tellers, but they're not telling you the truth. And that's what we have an awful lot of now.
I know. And your book, you know, points that out very pointedly. You know, we've now got a plethora of news channels out there, from Fox News Channel to CNBC to CNN. CNN was the granddaddy of that. Ted Turner started that back in the early 1980s. The BBC airs over here, Bloomberg, and then you've got these right-wing fringe networks like Newsmax and OAN. There's so many options, and your point about truth-telling and or someone sitting in their basement telling you what the news is, how do you determine what really is happening in the world? It's very hard to understand.
We lived in an environment, Jim, that when you wanted a job, they looked at your resume, they checked your references, they looked at your clips, they interviewed you. You were vetted. You were the real deal.
Right.
These people, God knows who they are or what their agenda is. I find that really frightening, because it's almost, I point this out in the book, take it a step further. It's not some guy in his basement. It's somebody on a fairly legitimate network sitting at an anchor desk, wearing a suit, having breaking news banners flash across the screen, discussing with and about the newsmakers and events of the day. But it's not news. It's 100% opinion. Enter Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, and Sean Hannity.
Exactly, and they're the top folks on cable television today. In fact, I'm looking at a chart. Nine of the top 10 cable news programs are on Fox. This show called Five, which I've only seen a few times because I can't tolerate it. And then you got Tucker, and then you got Hannity, and then Jesse Walters, and Brett Baer, the Ingraham angle, the Gutfield. The only non-Fox show in the top 10 is Rachel Maddow, and she only airs once a week now on Mondays. And so I don't get this draw to Fox News. Why people are watching this this programming that basically is an arm of Trumpism and the Republican Party. I mean, when real news is happening in the field, they're not reporting it.
Well, in my book, Changing Channels, the title is a double entendre. It means that the viewers are changing channels to the one that best reflects their political beliefs. They want a comfort zone. And I think that's why people watch Fox, because they believe that. And I think that Donald Trump, with, well, his racism and his anti-Semitism and all of his craziness, has tapped into the underbelly. And suddenly these people feel legitimized. And I know that's a harsh thing to say about some of our fellow citizens, but they're hearing what they, in their heart of hearts, believe.
And but it's not the truth.
Oh, no, definitely not the truth. Maybe it's their truth. I don't know.
I don't think it's anyone's truth. I mean, they've done fact checks. I mean, you can do a fact check about anything. And half of what's reported on Fox and half of the statements that Donald Trump made while he was president were blatant lies. But then these people believe, the viewers believe it.
Well, let me make an analogy, Jim. Say you want to listen to some music. You're going to listen to music that you like, that music that you relate to.
Right.
That's why they're watching Fox, because they like it and they relate to it.
But if you know that it's not true, and you know that the future of the country is at stake when you have an election, isn't it important to know what is right and what is wrong, what is true, what is false, what is erroneous, what is a lie? You know, doesn't that matter anymore?
It absolutely matters, definitely. But I'm not sure whether these people have convinced themselves that it's true. Look at the video from the January 6th insurrection. Those people must have believed it was true. Why else would they have behaved so abysmally, so criminally, and so anti-democratic? We look like a banana republic. We look like the first stages of a civil war.
It really is frightening. And these, the people who are Fox viewers tend to believe that the 1-6 insurrection, the attempt to overthrow the government, an attempted coup d'etat, really was nothing more than just maybe taking a tour through the people's house, the Capitol, while shouting Nancy, 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 and hang Mike Pence. You know, we were all educated in public school, and you got to know the difference between right and wrong. I mean, there were the visuals there of the cops being beaten by these protesters.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. It's what you see is what you get. It was an insurrection. There was violence. You and I have covered protests. Some of them have been peaceful. Some of them have been violent. We know the difference. And that was different. That was not peaceful. Maybe the people three blocks away on the mall were peaceful, but the ones who broke the barricades and invented our Capitol, definitely criminal.
I don't know if you had a chance to watch. CNN had a program on the other night called Perilous Politics, and it was all about the threats to our electoral system, how school board members, how election officials have been threatened, how people have come up to them and said, you know, I know the names of your children.
Yes.
Here they go to school, trying to push legitimate people who are trying to maintain our democracy out of our democratic system. And this is being perpetuated by these right-wing television networks and right-wing radio, and online, and to me, it's a very frightening time in the country.
Oh, it's very frightening. As you pointed out, you and I have been friends and colleagues for well over 30 years, and I think you would agree that I'm by nature an optimist. Mm-hmm. I am not optimistic now. I have never been so pessimistic about the state of democracy, the state of our country, and the future of the new generations. You know, we won't have to deal with this much longer, but our children and our grandchildren are going to be saddled with this craziness for a great portion of their lives.
Yeah, that's what I worry about. I mean, you know, if we become a country that's one party rule, which is where the Republicans seem to be taking us, and if they win the House and the Senate, and they have control of the Supreme Court, and Donald Trump or someone that he anoints to run in 2024 gain the presidency back, the Democrats may never get power again. And we will be a one-party state, much like Russia or China. I mean, the thought of that I can't fathom it.
No, and it would have been unthinkable a dozen years ago.
Right.
And now it's looming on the horizon. It's a possible reality.
And you know what's interesting is that TV created Donald Trump. You know, you and I, we grew up in the news business in New York City. And so we were well aware of Donald Trump. But he was not known around the country. You know, he was on the front page of the New York Post, but it wasn't until Celebrity Apprentice came along, and Rupert Murdoch of Fox News Channel, who also owns the New York Post and the Wall Street Journal, started to promote his candidacy, you know, very blatantly, that he became a national superstar. But Celebrity Apprentice made everyone knew him. It was one of the number one cable shows on TV for years. And
well, yeah, you're right. I mentioned in my book that I think my generation of journalists in New York City at that time in the 80s really owe the viewers a collective mea culpa and an apology. We helped to create him. He was a buffoon playboy. He appeared to be harmless. He was glitzy in a glitzy era. And if you put him on your show, your ratings doubled or tripled. He was good television, but he seemed foolish and innocuous. And we helped create this monster.
I know. And then, you know, when you see these clips of him making fun of handicapped people, or, you know, where he had no comment to make whatsoever about what happened to Speaker Pelosi's husband, who was, you know, almost killed by a hammer attacker who believed that, you know, he was going to break Nancy Pelosi's knees and she wasn't at home. I mean, all Donald Trump and his violent rhetoric, and that Nazis in Charlottesville, you know, there's some very fine people there. I mean, he's changed the paradigm and the way that we think in a very frightening way. And he knows how to manipulate it. And you know what really galls me, Judy, is that, you know, he lost the election 2 years ago. He's still at the center of the news cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
How does he maintain that?
Well, when he was running against Biden, I really kept thinking of the Dylan Thomas thing, and he would not go gentle into the good night. Mm-hmm. That he's incapable. His ego is just, I don't know what happened to that person as a child or as an adult, but it's all about him. He's a megalomaniac, and it's got to be Donald in the center of the spotlight all the time.
Absolutely. But let's just say that Trump does go away at some point, one way or the other. There is a movement now that he has created that seems to be part of the American political dynamic. And I don't think it's going away just because he goes away. If he fades away and just stays at Mar-a-Lago and plays golf, you've got, and you live in Florida part-time. So, you know of Ron DeSantis, you know of Rick Scott, you know of Marco Rubio, you know of the politics in Florida. You've covered the politics of Florida, you know, because you work for PBS down there. So, where is our two-party system, our democracy going, even if Trump isn't there? What's your view?
Well, there's a political operative named Rick Wilson. He's a Republican. I guess now he's a former Republican. He's certainly not a Trumper. He says Donald Trump really did not create this mess that we're in, that he sensed the underbelly of American human nature. And he ripped the scab off, and then he legitimized that kind of thought. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what you're saying, that it's not just him. He may be the face of it, but there's legions behind him. My sense, as I said, I'm very pessimistic. I think that part, the majority of the blame certainly goes with the right-wing fanatics. But mm-hmm. I don't think the Democrats have been able to neutralize or play the hand that well.
No.
It took them a long time to realize that the rules of the game had changed. And I'm not saying that they should get in the gutter with them, but that you have to adapt your strategies. And I don't think that backing the wackiest candidate in a primary on the Republican side is necessarily the right strategy. But I guess if I did know, I'd be running the DNC.
Well, that's a big problem too, because the DNC just doesn't seem to be getting out the votes. And you know, Donald Trump actually gained voters in 2020 over his electoral campaign in 2016. I mean, he had 74 million votes in 2020, and I think that that was an increase of something like 5 million votes over his electoral victory in 2016. So he actually became more popular during his presidency, but still lost the election because more people turned out for Biden in 2020, who got 81 million votes. But, you know, Trump is still a force to be reckoned with. And, you know, basically is dominating the Republican Party. Everyone but a few, like Liz Cheney, Mitt Romney, you know, they're the only ones speaking out. And people like Rick Scott, who, you know, have dropped out of the Republican Party, essentially. But it's frightening how he's gained support, how he maintains power, even though he's not president. I just don't get it.
Well, like most dictators, there's the fear factor. Yeah. People are terrified of being ridiculed or ostracized by him. That vindictiveness is part of his strategy, and it works. I give great kudos to Liz Cheney. I mean, the idea that Dick Cheney's daughter would become our hero is amazing. Right. But I'm not too impressed with what Mitt Romney has been doing.
No.
When you look at the video of him running for his life on January 6th, it's been a wake-up call. I do not understand why they don't gather the traditional Republicans in a room and say, we can't go it alone, but if we could get enough of us, we could take this guy on. We could make a difference. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe they've done that behind closed doors and they can't get the quorum. I don't know. But it seems to me that there's power in numbers, and that's the only way. You can't go one-to-one with Donald Trump.
No, no. And there are not enough Republicans who have the backbone to stand up and say, look, this is wrong. The rioting and the takeover of our capital, which hadn't happened since the British invaded in 1812 and burned it down. I mean, we've never seen anything like this. And, you know, you just wonder if we really aren't headed for some kind of civil war of some sort, not a civil war like two armies fighting each other, but a lot of terrorism, a lot of Paul Pelosi's being, you know, hit over the head with a hammer, or worse yet, shot by an AR-15, which we've had so many mass shootings in this country, you can't even count them anymore. But, you know, on the extreme level, I fear what could happen if we don't kind of come together as a country. And I wonder if it's going to take a 9/11 type of event or a Pearl Harbor type of event to bring us together as a people again. How we've become so divided, where I can't talk to my neighbor down the street because our political views are so divided.
Yeah, it's really, I have not lost any friends, but there are two couples that we just don't talk politics.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a history with somebody, it's hard to cut a cord. But on the other hand, I think to myself, how can they believe this crap?
Yeah, I know. It's horrid. You know, getting back to your book, Changing Channels, From the Facts to Outrageous Opinions. I mean, when you watch TV today, it seems so full of disinformation and misinformation. You know, we used to have something called the Fairness Doctrine, where you had to give two sides of a story. I remember starting out with you many years ago in New York, where, you know, if we went out to do a story, we had to have two sides. But they did away with the Fairness Doctrine during the Reagan administration back in 1987. And I just wonder, and this extends into social media, which is becoming even more and more powerful as a source of news and information, whether there shouldn't be some kind of Fairness Doctrine, some kind of regulatory environment that forces you to give both sides of the story and a fact check on what you are putting out. I mean, we need to put a halt on this.
No, you're right. Yeah, I produced a lot of political talk shows, and I used to say we booked one from column A, one from column B. We got a liberal and we got a conservative, and the host was a neutral arbiter who asked tough questions of both sides and didn't voice an opinion. And you're right. I think we need to go back to that. If you're the host of the show, it's not about you. It's about the guests. It's about the two senators or the two governors and what they think, and that you've got to be hardball with both of them.
Well, I mean, do you see any way that no matter who maintains power in the coming election cycles, do you see any movement towards the FCC imposing some kind of regulatory environment where you have to tell the truth or you have to give two sides of the story? Because if you don't, then people are just going to gravitate to where we talked about earlier, Fox TV, and just watch that ad infinitum and believe only what is told on Fox, not looking at CNN or MSNBC or the nightly news with Lester Holt or David Muir on ABC. They're just watching one thing all the time. It's this echo chamber. And without some kind of balance, remember Fox used to call itself fair and balanced, which is, that was one of the biggest jokes, but I mean,
unfair and unbalanced.
Which party or either party or both parties in Washington could put something together that would create a truth commission in media, something to bring us back to normalcy before it's too late?
Well, a truth commission in media could be very, very dangerous. That could lead to imprisonment of journalists, because I think that Fox is too deeply embedded in our national psyche at this point. You would have to have a Democratic sweep of the White House and both houses of Congress to change anything, as you're suggesting, which would be a great idea if it could work, if it could be implemented. But I don't think that the Democrats are going to get that kind of a mandate to be able to put the fairness doctor back in. But that could be a solution. It definitely could be.
Well, I don't think we're going to see a Democratic sweep anytime.
I don't think so.
In the near future, whether it's the upcoming election or the election in 2024 or beyond. But Judy, listen, I am out of time. You and I could talk about these issues forever and ever, and we'll have you back on the podcast in the future. And I really appreciate you taking the time. Judy wrote the book. I should call you Judith. That's your official name. Judith Bishop wrote the book, Changing Channels, From Just the Facts to Outrageous Opinions. And I'm Jim Paymar, the host of The Big Shift, your podcast, looking at the changing world.